This program is a production of Restoring the Core, an initiative designed to assist those wishing to go deeper into classic Christianity with resources available in a connected age. Online at restoringthecore.com. This is Finding Hidden Treasure, episode number 15. Today, we will be discussing the article, The Puritan Practice of Meditation, by Joel Beakey. Welcome to Finding Hidden Treasure, your weekly discussion of resources available for those looking to go deeper into the Christian faith. I'm Walter Hample. Is there something humanity was able to do 40 years ago that we cannot do today? We are accustomed to asking the reverse. If we think in terms of technology, there are devices existing today of which people 40 years ago could only have dreamed. Cell phones, flat-screen TVs, high-definition, iPads, and iPods are only a few of the things I could mention. A laptop computer today has more computing power than entire corporations had only a few decades ago. 40 years ago, a manuscript created by a typewriter wouldn't allow for an easy change if you had to add or delete a paragraph. It would require a lot of retyping, which, using today's word processing software, could be amended quickly and a new manuscript printed in a fraction of the time that it would take to retype the affected parts of a manuscript. However, my original question is not about these technical inventions of the last several decades. Is there something humanity was able to do 40 years ago that we cannot do today? The answer is yes. For all of the technical innovations of the last 40 years, the United States could not send men to the moon and return them safely as we did 40 years ago. Perhaps you'll object. You'll say that we have the knowledge and experience to do this since we've done it before. That's true. But we currently don't have a way to do it. Even if we decided to completely mimic the 1960s technology used for the Apollo spacecraft, we would still need to re-engineer the technology to create it. That would take time. In addition, we also don't have any world government or corporation ready and willing to fund the project. It could be recreated, but it simply doesn't exist today. Similarly, among Christians today, there is a lost art which was a commonplace practice and discipline centuries ago, but has fallen into disuse at this time. That is the art of biblical meditation. Dr. Donald Whitney, who has written the very helpful book Spiritual Disciplines for the Christian Life, believes that this is one of the greatest lacks in the church today. In this episode, we will be discussing the article, The Puritan Practice of Meditation, by Dr. Joel Beakey. First, we need to define what meditation is from a classically Christian, Bible-based perspective. The type of meditation we will be discussing is not what we typically think of when we hear this term today in Western culture. It is not referring to a practice of Eastern religions or New Age spirituality. It is not sitting cross-legged or repeating a mantra to empty one's mind. Rather, biblical meditation is a means of filling your mind with the things of God, Christ, and the Bible. We'll use two definitions supplied by two Puritan ministers of the 17th century. William Bridge defined meditation as the vehement or intense application of the soul unto something, whereby a man's mind doth ponder, dwell, and fix upon it, for his own profit and benefit, which in turn leads to God's glory. Thomas Watson referred to meditation as a holy exercise of the mind, whereby we bring the truths of God to remembrance and do seriously ponder upon them and apply them to ourselves. Edmund Calamy wrote, a true meditation is when a man doth so meditate of Christ as to get his heart inflamed with the love of Christ, so meditate of the truths of God as to be transformed into them, and so meditate of sin as to get his heart to hate sin. These wonderful saints of over 300 years ago had a profoundly biblical and practical sense of what real Christian meditation was all about. It's a good time to also dispel some myths about the Puritans, which might be stumbling blocks to our hearing what these great teachers and preachers of the faith can teach us today through the legacy of the writings they left behind. The term Puritan has been regarded negatively by our culture for a long time. Images of repressive behavior, judgmental attitudes, along with grim and dour looks, are probably what come to mind when we hear the term Puritan. That perception really doesn't fit history. the Puritans were not religious fanatics. J.I. Packer describes them as people of principle, devoted, determined, and disciplined. A fault they may have had was having a way of using a lot of words in their writings and sermons when perhaps fewer words would have done the job. They were a people who truly sought to live a life in which all facets of their lives would give glory to God. Another myth to dispel is that all of the writings and sermons which these Puritans communicate to us is that their work is simply an academic exercise which simply builds up head knowledge and leaves us simply as one of the frozen chosen. In reading this article by Joel Beakey, we will see that the Puritans were concerned that biblical meditation would influence not only just our minds, but our hearts as well. The Puritan teachers were masters at the use of analogy. Two of the most common, which I have found in regard to meditation, have had to do with the comparison of eating and with fire. Many of the Puritan teachers likened reading the scriptures to eating, and digestion as meditation. Richard Baxter said, "A man may eat too much, but he cannot digest too well." Thomas Watson said, "The reason we come away so cold from reading the Word is because we do not warm ourselves at the fire of meditation." The Puritans believed that true meditation would influence our minds and our affections. As you read this article, do remember that some 17th century terms may be a little hard to understand at first. There are terms such as prevent, which does not mean in 17th century English to stop something before it happens. In 17th century English, it means to go before. A dictionary might be a handy item to have when reading this article. Please don't let that stop you from reading it. There is truly much hidden treasure here. It may take a little effort to dig for it, but that effort will be well repaid in what you learn from these remarkable teachers who, though dead, have much to teach us today. Dr. Beakey shows us that the Bible contains a number of references to meditation. In Genesis chapter 24, verse 63, we find Isaac meditating in a field at evening time. In the first chapter of Joshua, we find the newly installed commander-in-chief of Israel being solemnly commanded by God to meditate day and night on a written copy of God's law. In the book of the Psalms, we find more references to meditation than we find in the rest of the Bible combined. The Puritans taught about two kinds of meditation, occasional and deliberate. Occasional meditation will be short and come about suddenly, triggered by something you observe in the environment around you. Perhaps it is something you see in nature. There is a verse in the Old Testament in which God commands the Israelites to do something which will result in a case of occasional meditation. In Numbers chapter 15, verses 37 through 40, we find the following. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, and tell them that they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and that they shall put on the tassel of each corner a cord of blue. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord, so as to do them, and not follow after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you have played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all my commandments and be holy to your God." The second type of meditation, according to the Puritans, is deliberate meditation. Dr. Beakey states, "The most important kind of meditation is daily deliberate meditation engaged in at set times." Calamy said, "Deliberate meditation takes place when a man sets apart some time, and goes into a private closet or a private walk, and there doth solemnly and deliberately meditate of the things of heaven. Such deliberation dwells upon God, Christ, and truth, like the bee that dwells and abides upon the flower to suck out all the sweetness. It is a reflecting act of the soul, whereby the soul is carried back to itself and considers all the things that it knows about the subject, including its causes, fruits, and properties." One particular object of deliberate meditation was the sermon. Paying attention to the sermon and its text was, of course, important. Sermon note-taking by the listeners in the congregation was another tool to assist in the reflection upon and remembering the sermon. There was a strong consensus among the Puritan writers about the interconnection of Bible reading or Bible hearing, meditation, and prayer. To that end, Joel Beakey quotes Thomas Manton, who wrote, Meditation is a sort of middle duty between the word and prayer, and hath respect to both. The word feedeth meditation, and meditation feedeth prayer. We must hear that we might not be erroneous, and meditate that we be not barren. These duties must always go hand in hand. Meditation must follow hearing and precede prayer. The Puritans saw meditation not only as an option, but a duty if one would grow into Christ-likeness. The article quotes Thomas Watson as observing, "A Christian without meditation is like a soldier without arms or a workman without tools. Without meditation, the truths of God will not stay with us. The heart is hard and the memory slippery, and without meditation, all is lost." Joel Beakey adds the words of John Owen, who said, "If I have observed anything by experience, it is this. A man may take the measure of his growth and decay in grace according to his thoughts and meditations upon the person of Christ and the glory of Christ's kingdom and of his love." Dr. Beakey has what I found to be a very useful section on the obstacles to meditation. It seems remarkable, though, that people living over 300 years ago before our 24/7 nonstop world would actually have to work through barriers to their becoming more experienced in the art of biblical meditation. Let me quote from the article about two of these obstacles written about in the 17th century. However, they sound so current to us today. Obstacle number one, unfitness or ignorance. They cannot confine their thoughts to an object. Their thoughts are light and feathery, tossed to and fro. Answer: disability, ignorance, and wandering thoughts offer no exemption from duty. Your loss of ability does not imply God's loss of right. Truth be told, you are probably unfit because you have neglected meditation and have not loved the truth. Sinful indispositions do not disannul our engagements to God, as a servant's drunkenness does not excuse him from work. Manton wrote, "Remedy your problem by getting a good stock of sanctified knowledge, and by constant exercise of that knowledge, leaning all the while on the Holy Spirit for assistance. You will find meditation becoming easier and sweeter in due course." Obstacle number two, busyness. Such say, "They are so harassed by the employments of the world that they cannot spend time in this duty solemnly and seriously." Answer: true religion is not performed merely in leisure time. Great busyness should move us to more meditation, as we then have more needs to bring before God and to meditate upon. I highly recommend reading this article. A PDF copy of it is on the Restoring the Core website by permission of Dr. Joel Beakey of Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I will be including other links as well. When it comes to our practice of biblical meditation, we are in a situation so much like our inability to travel back to the moon today. It's been done in the past. All of the information to do it is with us today. What it would take, in both cases, a concerted, diligent effort to do it. The resources are there for us to recover the lost art of biblical meditation in our own lives. Pray to God to stir up within you the disciplined, diligent heart and mind to glorify God in this way by keeping and chewing over thoughts of Him continually. I close with the words which Dr. Beakey gives us from Samuel Ward. For him, he expected that meditation should stir up our minds and hearts toward Christ. Over the chasm of many centuries, Ward instructs us today, "Stir up thy soul in meditation to converse with Christ. Look what promises and privileges thou dost habitually believe. Now actually think on them. Roll them under thy tongue. Chew on them till thou feel some sweetness in the palate of thy soul. View them jointly, severally, sometimes muse on one, sometimes of another more deeply. This is that which the spouse calls walking into the gardens," and this is referring to passage in the Song of Songs, "and eating of the fruits, which, in plain terms, I call using of faith and living by faith." Thank you for listening to this program. We can be contacted at mail@restoringthecore.com. We are on Facebook at www.facebook.com/restoringthecore. You can also follow us on Twitter at Restore the Core. My original blog is still active and can be found at schoolofthesolitaryplace.blogspot.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you join us next time for Finding Hidden Treasure.